The musician Justin Townes Earl was addicted to drugs until the day a friend dragged him to the hospital.
I suffered respiratory failure after being awake for 14 days. I've always known that, like, if you walk into the emergency room, and first off, they don't make you wait. Like, they go, oh, God, you come here, and they grab you. You know you're in trouble, and then you know you're in double trouble when the scissors come out and they start cutting your clothes off.
Earl says he's been clean 4 years now. And when he brought his guitar by our studios, the young musician wore a denim work shirt and signs of an eventful life. Is the tattoo on your arm from before or after this experience that got you clean?
Which one?
It was early in the morning, early for a musician anyway, just hours before he'd been performing the song that he prepared to play for us.
I was thinking about taking all my songs down a half a step this morning to see if I can atone for my deeper baritone this morning.
And he started a tune that helps you get deeper into Earl's story. He plays guitar without a pick, flicking his fingers across the strings like a man shaking water off his hand. Justin Townes Earl carries the names of two acclaimed songwriters, Townes Van Zandt and Earl's own father, Steve. This song describes a man with a chaotic life. It took Earl years to get it recorded because he had a chaotic life.
Well, I take my time in coming, take my time in leaving. If you ask me where I'm going, tell you when it's needed. Oh, you know why, you'll never be what you need. If you ain't glad I'm leaving, girl, you know you ought to be. I'll cheat, gamble, and steal from any man. Well, from Georgia to Los Angeles, Texas up to Maine, I'm a wanted man. Is that the kind of life you want to lead? If you ain't glad I'm leaving, girl, you know you ought to be.
Justin Townes Earl. I don't want to assume that when you sing in the first person, you're singing about yourself, but are you trying to tell us something about yourself with that song?
At the time that I wrote it, I was trying to tell everybody something about myself. I do advertise it at shows as a warning, but then again, it is a performance and a show.
What time did you write it?
I was 15 or 16 years old when I wrote that song.
Well, yeah. Let's mention what was happening with your father. It's been very public. He had drug abuse problems. He was arrested for drug-related crimes. He spent some time in prison. Were you, in a sense, acting out then if you were a problem kid?
I don't know if in my family you could call it acting out. I think it was kind of playing along with the game. I mean, I didn't do anything differently than what my father was doing. I mean, it's a really hard family to rebel in. I could have become an accountant, or I could have become a Republican. That would have really pissed him off.
He's politically active and much more on the leftward side of things.
Yes, he is.
Would this be a period when you were also getting involved with drugs?
Yeah, I'd already been involved in them.
Was there a period where your father was trying to wag his finger at you and say, you shouldn't do that, I don't want you to get involved in these things?
My dad's a big finger wagger. He's full of advice. But back then, you know, it's just like any teenager. There's no such thing as a teenager that listens to a single word their father says.
Because we are talking here about people giving advice, I wonder if you could play a song of yours in which I think the narrator is trying to give advice, but trying to say he's not giving any advice. Who am I to say?
Yeah, I can do that.
Well, now who am I to say? If all I know is what I heard, with the things some people say, you can never be too sure. So you take your pills and poison, drink yourself to death, give yourself away until you ain't got nothing left. 'Cause who am I to say that there's anything wrong with that? Oh, but why do you call? It's such hours every time, saying I don't need no money, I just been thinking of you tonight. Oh, but who am I to say that it wasn't for the better, girl? Who am I to say now
Justin Townes Earl. You must have realized as a very young man, hey, I've got some talent here. And like it or not, I've got some connections. I could really make something of myself, or I could waste my life.
Well, it was a friend of mine actually named Scotty Melton who I met at a party at this house that I'd been living at for a while with a bunch of guys. And Scotty was nowhere near as, like, father. Like, he never tried to stop me from doing anything. But as far as songwriting goes and direction with my work, he was giving me all the same advice that my father gave me. The only difference is I listen to Scotty.
Oh, because it's so easy to ignore the advice of your loved ones, even if it's good advice.
Well, exactly. And it's a lot easier for anybody to listen to somebody who you can get high with, or I could have a drink with, you know, and that wasn't going to happen with my father.
What then finally forced the decision?
Well, it was my body finally forced me to make a change. I mean, I'd pretty much crippled my insides. I mean, I had the liver of a, you know, still do have the liver of a 60-year-old alcoholic, you know, and it's, I wouldn't say that I'm stable, but I know that I'm very happy and comfortable living without the use of drugs now, you know, and I've been lucky that I haven't had an urge to get high or drink, and I'm just hoping that that stays away.
That's Justin Townes Earl. His new album is The Good Life. You can hear how he was inspired by his grandfather and the Civil War at NPR.org. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inske.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.
It's not the devices that has one musician concerned. It's the network itself. Damian Kulash is the lead singer and guitarist for the band OK Go. He has this commentary.
For musicians, it's an exciting time because anything could happen. My band's played the standard game. We've toured relentlessly. I mean, more than 500 shows in the last 2 years alone, and we've sold the better part of a million records the old-fashioned brick-and-mortar way. But the thing we're most known for these days? Homemade videos we uploaded to YouTube. They've been streamed more than 50 million times, and we got a Grammy for one of them. Basically, it's totally crazy. This new user-operated music industry is a very weird and occasionally very wonderful place. Musicians who never stood a chance in the lockdown systems of the past are finally getting their shot. The question we all have, of course, is where's the rent going to come from? The old gatekeepers were the major labels, the commercial radio stations, MTV, and as everyone knows, they wielded their power ruthlessly. But though they may not have been equitable or generous with the cash they collected, at least the handful of stars they anointed were making good livings. And that fueled the delusion for the rest of us. So for musicians to make decent livings now, do we need new gatekeepers? If not, well, who's collecting the money and from where? If so, who are these new gatekeepers? The online retailers, bloggers, subscription services, Facebook or MySpace? We can let innovation and competition answer these questions, or we can let the telephone and cable companies decide for us. That's what will happen if tiered internet service becomes a reality. It's really all a question of where value comes from in this new universe. It used to come from controlling access, and now it needs to come from somewhere else. People clearly are willing to spend money on music, but as it stands right now, they spend it mostly on hardware or access fees. We spend lots on our iPods, but very little on the files we fill them with. We spend tons on broadband service, but very little on the things we actually download. The genius who figures out how to tease value out of this confusing new world could be 17 and working out of his garage. That's the way it's worked with the great net ideas of the past. But that won't happen if the internet playing field doesn't stay level. If we allow the companies that sell us broadband access to control the market on ideas, we'll be stuck with their ideas. And that's the last thing any of us should want.
That's Damian Kulash. He's the lead singer and guitarist of the band OK Go.
an hour since a quarter to four. Throw on your clothes a second side of Surfer Rosa, and you leave me with my jaw on the floor. Just when you think you're in control, just when you think you got a hold, just when you get on a roll. Oh, here it goes, here it goes, here it goes again. Oh, here it goes again. I should've known.
When I interviewed Mexican tenor Rolando Villazón 4 years ago, his future seemed impossibly bright. He was 31, charming, ruggedly handsome, and he had a rare gift. You could hear it the moment he began to sing.
Quanto è bella, quanto è cara, più la vedo, più mi piace.
It's been 4 eventful years since that first CD. His career took off like a cork from a champagne bottle. Performances at the world's great opera houses, critical raves, dates with the glamorous soprano Anna Netrebko. Concert dates, that is. In 2007, Rolando Villazón reached a pinnacle with a new record deal with the prestigious Deutsche Grammophon label. In March, he recorded his first solo record for them, a collection called Cielo e Mar, Sky and Sea. Yet all was not well. Something happened in June of 2007. The critics noticed, and so did Rolando Villazón.
It was a point where I just, you know, couldn't sing the way I wanted to sing. I could sing, but not the way I wanted to and the way I loved to, forgetting about technique, forgetting about producing sounds and concentrating in creating emotions and the psychological moment of the character. I was concentrating in producing the notes, in being able to reach the high notes. I really need a rest. I went to the doctor. The doctor said, yes, your iron is completely low. You need vitamins. You need to take 5 weeks off. And I thought, you know what? I think this is a good moment to not take 5 weeks, but 5 months, and come back completely full of energy. And it was a moment of going inside of myself and analyzing all these territories I have been through, yeah, in order to come back with a new map.
Yeah. So you were in concert and you noticed your voice wasn't hitting those high notes. I mean, Plácido Domingo's voice is cracked on national television. Did you really think something was drastically wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's just when you are there and, as I say, you're struggling with the voice, this is not what you want. On the other side, it was not a tragedy, it was not a disaster. It was not a happy moment, of course. It was a difficult personal moment. And at certain point, even I thought this is the end of my career, as you know, a fast career that just burned out. That was the dramatic opera tenor in me.
When we talked in 2004, one of the things that you said, and I'm going to paraphrase, you know, we've seen so many singers have an incredible career of 3 or 4 years, and then poof, you don't hear of them after 5 years, it's over.
Hmm.
Yeah, did you think that when you were, I mean, was there a moment that you thought,
yeah.
This is it, my dream
is
over? Yeah,
I thought probably this is it, yeah, probably it was, well, at least it was 6 years, not five, not
that's
three.
That's true.
No, on the other hand, of course, there was this voice saying, no, Rolando, you're crazy, this is just a moment, and, you know, every great adventure comes with great adversity, and otherwise it would not be a great adventure. And in fact, in a great adventure, adversity is not only expected, it should be welcomed. That's what it makes it interesting and exciting. And I can tell you this story. I remember when I was in Berlin years ago. At some point, I started having troubles in my kidneys, and I thought, what is going on? So I went to the doctor, and he said, well, you have a small infection, just take some antibiotics. So I take antibiotics. For 10 days, going to pee was really painful. It was like a torture. And after that, it was over. Since then, every time I go to the toilet, I actually smile. And just to the fact of things working well, you know, that everything is just wonderful, how the system works. thanks to the pain and thanks to that trouble, I now experience my body in a better way. Well, it's the same story now with my voice.
It's interesting, this was recorded before your break. Has your approach changed? I mean, this CD sat in the vault for a little while.
Yeah, well, you know, fortunately it was recorded in March, because otherwise if it had been, you know, in December, I would not have recorded it. And I know I have to say, of course, things have changed. I am very proud of the result of the CD. 2011 was a difficult year. It was ups and downs. And this was as up as I could get in 2007. Really, it was a fantastic week. I was feeling really, really good. It could have come in another moment and it would have been very painful. And I would have been suffering a lot, because I put a lot of heart in this CD. It's a very important project for me. What can you say? You know, these things happen or not happen. And, well, it happened that my voice was there and I was healthy and the energy was there. And so this is fantastic.
The whole CD follows a certain projection, not only in terms of the songs that you're singing, the titles that you've chosen, but in the way you sing them.
Yes, absolutely. And the order was very important. It's about really the momentum of the characters in the love story. In the beginning of the CD, as I say, it's the construction of the crystal castle. Then in the middle of CD, the tragedy pops up and it talks about suffering and it talks about betrayal and it talks about all these terrible things that could happen in a love story. And it's like the crystal castle being smashed and being broken, and then you see yourself barefooted and naked walking through the crystal pieces and leaving your blood and your sweat there. And at the very end, it comes this energetic cavaletta from Luisa Miller, which for me was in a way to say, but then you have to fight for love. The real love story starts when you grab these pieces, these crystal pieces, and you put them together with your own blood, and at the end what you create is not this crystal castle anymore, but it's this sculpture, this monument that it belongs more to yourself. It's more truthful, and it comes from your heart and from your own story, and then this is real love.
There's one cut on the new CD, Cielo Amar, and it's a song from the telling of the Faust story, Dai Compi, by Arrigo Boito from Mephistopheles. You didn't make any Faustian bargains to get your voice back, did you?
I swear to God, no. Well, no devil visited. Well, probably some visited me, but I didn't see them or I didn't sign anything.
tell us a little bit about this song. I mean, this is a moment of introspection. What goes through your mind when you hear it?
Well, it's, you know, when you think about the character and what comes with it, you know, what comes with it is to be happy with what you have. The things that are gone, and you don't expect to have them back. Because even if it would be possible to have them back, there is a price to pay, and the price that you pay is that nothing is the same. I think it's that, to concentrate in the actually treasures you have in life, and the treasures you have include the dark clouds and include the difficult moments and the wonderful moments. That's what makes us complete human beings. Mi ferme soltanto l'amore dell'uomo, l'amore di Dio. unfortunately, we see loneliness or we see tragedy or we see things like that as the one thing we want to avoid. But it is with us. It's part of us. And if we condense them into the whole, then we can experience life in a much complete way. Then we can have a much more intense sense of the moment. And so I think this is what should happen to you when you are singing Faust, going through the tragedy, amazing tragedy of this character. Mm.
Tenor Rolando Villazón, his new CD is called Cielo e Mar. The title means sky and sea, and it's on the Deutsche Grammophon label. Rolando Villazón joined us from London. Thank you, and best of luck with all of the things you want to do.
Thank you to you too.
Io conosco un giardino a tutti sconosciuto, un nido di velluto.
You can hear arias from Rolando Villazón's new CD and discover much more opera and classical music on our website, npr.org/music. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.